Hey guys, we are here, we are back. It is me, I'm Jen.
I'm Carrie.
And Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners, once again, I believe we're on episode 84 today. Working right on down, can't wait. Loving it, loving it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have had some little news as far as our guys go. The Loki trailer. On its now, see, I didn't. I guess I'm just stooping backwards, or I'm just old. I didn't realize they gave times and dates for trailer premieres. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, I didn't either. Apparently, that's for people that really live online.
Okay, all right. So, but anyway, yeah. they do that. So the Loki season 2 trailer premiere. Actually has made the number one spot for Disney Plus or any other streaming service as the most watched premiere trailer ever with over 80 million views.
Jeez. Ever. 80 million?
Yeah. 80 million people tuned in to watch this trailer as it happened.
Yeah,
we have been desperately anticipating this season, and I hope if it does not live up to expectations, I am going to be so pissed.
Well, yeah, if it doesn't, there's going to be some fallout.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they left it at the end of season one with so many expectations.
Yes.
And, you know, if they miss one or two, okay. As long as they don't, like, completely reroute the thing and do a totally different storyline than the one that we're expecting, you know.
Yeah.
It should be all right.
I would anticipate that, especially after this trailer reveal, which, if you don't mind my saying, you know, we've had Secret Invasion come out. We've had Hawkeye come out. You know, all these Disney Plus things, and they've done okay.
Yeah.
Inexplicably, you know, this trailer has done very, very well.
It's inexplicable.
Okay. Well, right. So, I think that very possibly, Tom obviously is in demand.
Absolutely.
B, people, you know, we talk about Iron Man and the traditional, you know, Spider-Man, Ant-Man, the Hulk, anybody you want to talk about individually, they love them. But people really, really love Loki.
They love Hiddleston's version of Loki.
Okay. Right. And, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. I really do think that this has gotten so many views because A, that was a fantastic first season.
Yes.
B, Tom Hiddleston is frickin' Loki.
And the fact that he has been MIA for almost a year.
Well, to us, everyone that's listening to this podcast and everybody that's in the know, we've been salivating for this.
Yes.
And so, yes, us, certainly. But even mainstream, you know, people that don't know the first thing about Tom Hiddleston are straight up like, you know, whatever, Loki.
But if you say Loki, they go, oh!
Right. Yes, yes, yes. Loki's got that sex appeal.
I mean, I should have called the podcast friggin' Loki and Jack Sparrow. Because let me tell you, I've told people about this podcast. I've told people they need to listen to us. You know, it's great. What's the name of it? Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners. Who?
Yeah.
Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners for Johnny Depp and for Tom Hiddleston. Who's that?
Yeah.
But you say Jack Sparrow and Loki, and they go, oh, God, yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, yeah, the character certainly.
You know, they definitely know Loki and Jack Sparrow if they don't know anything else.
Well, when it comes to the MCU, and we talk about your sex appeal people.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, and I mean, we all know, of course, but I think this is very telling. Like, the top five, maybe top three sexiest MCU would be Loki.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be in there. He would be in there. And that's probably because, Chris Hemsworth, because, of course.
My top three would be RDJ, Loki, and Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Not and necessarily be, in that order, guys.
You know, and some people would maybe substitute one of those, but probably not Tom. They'd substitute Chris Evans,
right?
Perhaps, but you're consistent.
And then you've got the really, really odd ones that would switch one of them for Chris Holland. Yeah, right.
Dave Bautista, you know.
Or Bautista, or yeah.
But, you know, we've got Tom. He may be bailing out, you know, Disney Plus at this point. The sooner they bring this out, the better it will be for them.
And the sooner they release the moratorium on Captain Jack Sparrow, the better. And on Grindelwald, the better.
Ooh, okay. Oh, well, that's another can of worms.
Well, the thing is, in a press release, they stated that he would be welcome to return to Disney Plus once his name had been cleared.
And it has.
It has. Have you seen him on any Disney Plus shit?
No.
I haven't either. And I do not think it's because he didn't want to go. So, I think somebody decided, nope, I made the decision, so I'm going to stick to it regardless. And now they're holding back.
You know, Jen, honestly, and I know the franchise would suffer, but I hope he morally stands by that.
Yeah, you know, I kind of do too. Right. I think Jack Sparrow was pretty much played out. That last performance just kind of, that was the last nail in the coffin for me. You know, I had no interest in seeing Jack Sparrow from that point on. I'd rather see him move on and do some different stuff. Grindelwald, however, that is a whole different story. Grindelwald, I would love to, and no offense to Mads Mikkelsen.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to him. I love him. He's an amazing actor.
Isn't he?
But he stepped into a role that was vacated by another actor. That's hard as it is. When that actor is willing, able, and wanted to step back into that role. Yeah. Yeah. You know.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, and we cited this.
Yeah, Mads said he would definitely give it back up to him.
Yeah, right, right.
But not only does Disney have to agree with it, J.K. Rowling has to agree with it. And that bitch doesn't agree to anything. So.
Her. Ooh. So they do give her that creative license.
Oh, have you not been paying attention when they talk about the Grindelwald movies?
If you don't mind my saying, I'm very little involved with the Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling's World of Wizardry franchise.
Well, she is side by side with them as far as power goes, choosing the actors, what she's going to allow the changes to her scripts, the way she sees things versus the way they see things. Yeah, they're pretty much on like an even keel, which is one of the biggest reasons that people have been giving Disney shit, because J.K. Rowling is a homophobic, transphobic individual, and she's made it very clear that she doesn't care for anything other than the norm as far as sexual preference. She doesn't like those people. She doesn't see any use for those people. Now, how you can write a gay character and then complain when people see him as a gay character? Okay, whatever.
Oh, okay, so knowing that you do enjoy a lot of franchises, you're pretty into the Harry Potter.
Oh, my gosh. That's like saying that Chris Hemsworth is pretty into Thor.
Okay. All right. So, you know, with that, okay, so you're a super fan.
Absolutely.
Are you basically, kind of like I would have been with like Ian Fleming with Bond and overriding things that were, you know, going down with the movies. Are you entrusting Rollins to make these decisions?
I don't have a choice.
Wow.
Now, I will say...
Wow.
I will say that I've not watched the last two movies.
Okay.
I watched Fantastic Beasts. And I liked it. It was cute.
Okay.
However, some of the attitudes that were put forth were kind of... they just went against my grain. And, Johnny was amazing as Grindelwald. But once again, yeah. Grindelwald was an evil, evil, evil person. Seeing Johnny in those ice blue contacts was so much like watching Black Mass all over again.
Yeah.
Talk about freaking me. Oh, yeah, I freaked the freak out.
I never actually watched the films, but I definitely recognize.
You've seen the images.
A totally different. Yes.
And damn, he's pretty.
Oh, I don't. He is pretty. Yes.
I don't give a damn. Blonde-haired, blue-eyed, or black-skinned, dark-haired, dark-eyed. The man is pretty.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Dial the contrast up to 100 and. Send him out, just whatever. But, so, that's the only news I have. Did you have any other news?
You know, no. Everything seems to be kind of playing out. We're still seeing what the deal is with the fallout from the Hollywood Vampires European set. But they're still playing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
And, yeah, more than likely, the fallout is not going to be major. It's not.
No. It happens all the time, actually.
Well, the thing about it is people are wondering why it happened to such an experienced individual instead of one that's fresh out the box, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
But that's pretty much the only, that's the biggest thing that I'm hearing is, you know, he knew better. Why did he do that? He knows better. He knows how to not do that. He knows how to counter, you know, blah, 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 blah.
I have sympathy for him, actually, if you want to use that argument.
Oh, I do, too.
Right.
I do, too, honey. Do you know how many mornings I've woke up going, oh, God, I'm hungover. I know better than this. Why do I let myself do this?
Woke up hungover. Why did I do this? Why did I do this? I've got to go to work, and I would just take another drag.
Or reach for the half full glass that's sitting by the bed because that's where you left it, and go, okay, get me through today. Just get me through today. Yep.
Right.
Been there, done that. And he's had a hell of a lot of stress on him. You know, yeah, he cut loose. He let go, and things went a little too far. You know what? Yeah. With ordinary people, it happens all the time. But they're not under the microscope.
Exactly.
So, you know, cut the guy some slack. Give him a break. Let's just hope that he gets control of it before it gets control of him. Because I don't want to be reading a eulogy in the next little while. I really don't. We've lost too many recently, and I don't want to lose another one. So, Johnny, get your shit together and, you know, don't be a dick. Don't die.
you know, my daughter ended up moving to Huntsville a couple of months ago, and she moved to Huntsville, and that's the birthplace of Tallulah Bankhead.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a whole lot of gentle readers and listeners know who that is, but she was the original libertine in Hollywood, and she loved drinking, and she loved men, you know, and that sort of thing.
And they, basically, between the two of them, they killed her, right?
Well, she was killed by a combination of gonorrhea, actually gonorrhea and malnutrition.
Like I said, alcohol and men.
Yep. She died at 66. If Johnny is going to reach age 60.
He's already age 60, honey. He just turned 60.
I thought he was like 58.
He just turned 60. 1963 is when he was born.
Well, Johnny can absolutely do whatever he wants and die right now, frankly. He's lived a fantastic, like, he's already legendary.
He is. Well, he was legendary at 30.
Yeah, right. You know, we're basically just expounding on his legacy. And if he wants to get passed out drunk and just stupid,
he has every right to do so.
He does. And if the rest of his bandmates, you know,
if they can deal with it, so can we. So
exactly.
Everybody who's bitching about it, okay, suck it up. It's one concert. Yeah. It's one man. Chill the hell out. All right.
His bandmates know who he is.
They do.
And they don't seem to have a problem with it, frankly.
Because they've all been there.
Yes. Yes. They are all experienced rock stars, and this is.
And Johnny is not. So regardless of his fame as an actor, the whole rock star thing is a brand new bag for him. So yeah, he is kind of like the one that's brand new.
Yeah.
So yeah, everybody chill out. Let's hope he'll be fine. But I have another announcement as well. Carrie, you already know all about this.
Sorry.
Obviously. I am not running this podcast today. I am actually going to sit down and shut the hell up, believe it or not. Carrie, it's on you. You decided you wanted to run the podcast. You've got the set in front of you. And there we go. It's all you, baby. Take over.
Well, you know, we talk about the MCU and notable actors and, you know, people that work with Tom and work with Johnny that are gifted in their own right. We haven't paid a whole lot of attention. We have actually paid a lot of attention to Samuel Jackson, but we haven't really analyzed it.
And this is podcast 2 of a series as we sit now. We're not sure how many there are going to be, so we're just saying 2 of a series.
Yeah, and you know, I think I've kind of encapsulated it, but when it comes down to it, you know, the MCU is known for the star power that they ended up, you know, bringing forth. I appreciate the characters. We're talking about Black Widow, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America.
Loki.
Awesome.
Loki.
Yeah, Loki, absolutely. But who plays them? And I think the MCU has been incredibly successful, not only because they're finally realizing superheroes on the big screen, but because who they cast.
And
Robert Downey Jr. as...
Can I say... I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to interrupt. Can I say just, you know, the casting is 90% of it. Well, no. The casting is 75% of it. But the way these actors play these parts is what brings those characters to life for those of us who don't read comic books or who don't study mythology or who don't know these characters from any other format but from the big screen. And the actors themselves have done a phenomenal job. If they had not, we wouldn't be talking about them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're, you know, we're talking about established characters first. And I remember we had the Ultimates and the Marvel Comics, where they were very brave and Marvel decided they were going to do this semi-alternate timeline where they were going to be more realistic. And a lot of people died, you know, during the invasion, like, for example, in the Avengers. And you know what? The Hulk in the comics and the Avengers movie that we remember accidentally, but on his rampage, killed some 800 people.
Oh, wow.
And that was kind of one of their things. And they had some incredibly accomplished writers, Michael Bendis, guys like that, that ended up writing these stories. That being said, when they ended up doing this, they also kind of cast people.
Okay.
And I really do think that, like in the case of Tony Stark, they had a guy with a goatee, and he was super rich and kind of a douche, and it seemed like the most probable person to cast in the role of Tony Stark would be Robert Downey Jr.
Absolutely.
With Nick Fury, it was different. They conscientiously drew him and gave him the mannerisms of Samuel Jackson before he had any sort of approval.
I read that.
Like that.
I read that. They asked if they, well, actually they asked him if he minded if they based that, if they based Fury off of his usual characters. And he said, no, he had no problem with it. So years before it ever actually made it to the big screen, it was a thing.
Blessings. He did give blessings. Okay. Okay.
Oh yeah, he's like, I don't own the mannerisms. I don't own the, yeah, you can do whatever you want to. I mean, I'm honored, but yeah, you don't have to ask me. Yeah, sure.
You know, and when they did it in the comics, they didn't make the Samuel Jackson version that we know from like Pulp Fiction, you know, or, you know, Django Unchained, but it was definitely Samuel Jackson. And when he stepped into the role 8 years later,
yeah,
to put it to film, he's like, I have definitely got this. A, I'm playing myself. B, I'm reading the material that you guys are giving me. And so it was easy.
Right.
And so Samuel Jackson, when we talk about some of his main roles, and we're talking about what, 140 something,
142
yeah, acting gigs that he's done. Of course, I mean, we're doing this podcast, you would have to say Nick Fury, but when you're looking at Samuel Jackson's career, Nick Fury,
not the first thing you think of.
Absolutely. Have you seen any of Secret Invasion? I haven't.
No.
That being said, I haven't.
No, I have not.
And I hate it because we're literally talking about, from what I've read in the reviews, a Samuel Jackson extravaganza.
Oh,
and
wow.
You're right. They really do give these actors freedom to, if not be themselves, develop these characters.
Right.
And, you know, Samuel Jackson has recreated Nick Fury to the point to where I was always a Nick Fury fan from back in the 70s and 80s. And he's not Nick Fury to me. Samuel Jackson is Nick Fury.
And the thing about it is, okay, everybody knows Samuel L. Jackson's characters. There is one word above all others that his characters love. Motherfucker. Okay, this is Disney. All right, that is not going to happen. But he still manages to give off the motherfucker attitude without using the word. I don't know how, but he does it.
Yeah, you know, in doing the research for this assignment, I looked at a lot of different Samuel Jackson roles, and I saw a lot of pictures, and I saw him as Jules in Pulp Fiction and that sort of thing. But the most menacing bad motherfucker in pictures that I have seen is him as Nick Fury. I don't want to fuck with Nick
He's
Fury.
He's terrifying.
I would rather fuck with Steve Rogers than I would Nick Fury.
No kidding, right? See, I'd rather go up and slap Thor backhanded. I mean, really.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I would place my chances as better with surviving with Thor than I would with Nick Fury.
I think you're right. And I know that these MCU actors and actresses get along very, very well. And they all talk very highly of Samuel Jackson. He's older than them. And his acting credentials go way back. I mean, he's an actor's actor.
Yep. Well, one of his best friends is Christina Ricci.
And I should have put Lazarus as one of these characters. I didn't. But yeah, you know, he touches people that he works with, and what he leaves on the screen is indelible. And Nick Fury is certainly, you know, one of those characters.
Absolutely. Well, Nick Fury is one of those that I put up because we started last week talking about how, you know, what makes a hero, what makes a villain, and, you know, why would you consider each one of these characters what you do? And, like, Nick Fury is one of those. Okay, he's like, he could be cast as either one.
He could.
It depends on your point of view.
Yeah, you know, actually, and, you know, by extension, Nick Fury, if he ever decided to go rogue and Samuel Jackson's going to play that part.
Oh, God.
Whoa, be it unto you.
I want to see that one.
Oh, me too. Me too. But, you know, him as, you know, one of the absolute defining roles, you know, sure, MCU, yes. Like, I put him up there with Thor. I put him up there with the major, major heroes of the MCU. But Samuel Jackson, I definitely put him as a premier actor
in
the MCU. I mean, wow.
Oh, man. You know? It's like, what is it in the very first Avengers? The Coalition is there on screen, and they say something along the lines of, they gave him an order, and he said, and I thought it was a stupid motherfucking order, so I didn't, I just ignored it. I'm like,
yeah.
Hell yeah!
Exactly.
I mean, that's just classic Fury right there. You know, I didn't think that what you said had any point to it whatsoever, so I just ignored it, and I'm doing my own thing, so get over it.
Yep.
So,
and,
yeah.
You know, he is definitely a hero there. And when it comes to villain roles, he's certainly going to bring a terrible villain. Let's face it.
Well, yeah.
You know, thank God that Nick Fury is on the good guy's side.
No kidding, right? If you ever, like you said, if you ever went rogue, we would all be, I don't care on the big screen or not, we would be looking over our motherfucking shoulders.
And, you know, we've seen him in villain roles like in The Spirit, which we're not going to mention. We've seen him in a few other things that are going to be coming up a little later. But, you know,
how about a realistic villain role?
Hmm?
How about a realistic villain role?
I am going to go with Unbreakable. Year 2000.
Oh, I thought Django would be that one.
Well, that's going to be number three.
Gotcha. So Unbreakable.
Oh, yeah. But Unbreakable, he was Mr. Glass.
Okay. Named so because.
And they ended up doing a sequel to Unbreakable called Mr. Glass, and it was kind of a part two. It was the only M. Night Shyamalan sequel.
Are you kidding me? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is huge.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It was kind of unusual. And everybody, Bruce Willis, what's his name? Pure Foy, or no, James McAvoy.
Ended
up coming back for it. Bruce Willis, Samuel Jackson, they came back for it. But
see, I've seen Unbreakable, but I have not seen Mr. Glass. So
I've seen kind of parts of Mr. Glass, and I want to finish it. And it's not because I'm not disinterested, but gentle listener, you know, whenever we think of Samuel Jackson, we think of, you know, bad motherfucker and throwing motherfucker around and being, you know, streetwise and that sort of thing. Here, and we talk about actors that basically play themselves. And you could possibly accuse Johnny of that in certain instances. You could certainly accuse Samuel Jackson of that. He's essentially playing himself, throwing in some, you know, motherfuckers or what have you, and being stoic. But this was typecast, and this definitely showcased him being a invalid that had the brittle bones disease.
Oh.
That was his thing. Like, he literally had broken his bones some 200 times before he was 40.
Oh, geez.
And he was the surprise villain at the end. And it's kind of considered a cinematic moment, the big reveal at the end. Whether you like the movie or not, apparently it was a surprise that Samuel Jackson's character was the villain, and he ended up earning the supervillain title of Mr. Glass.
Oh, wow.
It was really deep. He was very super articulate. He was living essentially in a basement. He was overly obsessed with comic books, and it's fascinating.
Wow, that sounds like 90% of the kids I grew up with.
Yeah, and he was that, yes, babe, absolutely. He was portrayed, and everybody was like, oh my God, you know, what a
I know
weird,
him.
Crazy role. And it turned out in the end, in fact, he was the villain, and it was such a well-made film that people were kind of surprised.
Well, M. Night Shyamalan, of course it was.
And that's how well he did this role.
Yeah, and you're saying that he stepped out of himself to do this character.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, we talk about his early roles when he was, you know, doing Spike Lee and doing The Right Thing, and he was doing the DJ thing, you know, where he was a funk, you know, street DJ. Here he was a nerdy fucking bookworm.
Yeah, and that's one word I don't think I could ever used to describe SLJ.
He was a wheelchair infirmed, you know, nerd.
Wow.
And he pulled it off with aplomb. Like,
it was like Leonardo DiCaprio in What's Eating Gilbert Grape, when at the awards ceremony, the other actors were floored that he was normal.
Yes, exactly. If we would have done this movie earlier in Samuel Jackson's career, you maybe would have had a different interpretation of Samuel Jackson entirely.
Right.
You know, really great movie. And if you're into things like the MCU and superhero movies, I would certainly, M. Night Shyamalan movies.
I love them. I'm sorry. I got to stick my foot in it right here.
Yeah. Personally, I love them.
I absolutely love them. Yeah.
This one, though, I think everybody should definitely check out.
Well, if you're into the comic books, if you're not into the comic books, what are you doing listening to us?
You already know why you're here.
Right. So, yeah, definitely. I'm going to do that. So give me a couple weeks because I'm not sure where I'm going to find it. But give me some time to rewatch Unbreakable and see if I can find Mr. Glass. And I will bring a review to the show.
Actually, if you don't mind my volunteering this, Bruce Willis has been in several Samuel Jackson movies.
Oh, yes.
At least four.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see his degrees of separation with Johnny.
Well, that's easy. You keep talking, and I'll let you know.
You know, we have the degrees of separation through the MCU with Sam and Tom.
Right.
Sam and Johnny, I do wonder about. I can't help but think that these two definitely get along.
Samuel Jackson and Johnny. Sam wouldn't put up with Johnny's bullshit. That's the biggest problem.
And, you know, kind of vice versa, but that seems to be where, like, the rubber meets the road and you establish a relationship with Johnny, for
right.
example. You know, Johnny and Marlon Brando, I would have expected it necessarily that, you know, Brando would have tried to ground him to powder, but apparently he really loved Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, took him in as his son. I mean, yeah, really, yeah. Honestly.
Yeah, you know, these are actors, and
so
I don't know, I can't help but think that
all right, let's see what we got. Believe it or not, Samuel Jackson is not the first one that pops up. Richard Grant is the first degree of separation between Bruce Willis and Johnny Depp.
Richard Grant
was in The Player with Bruce Willis and in Corpse Bride with Johnny Depp. Harry Dean Stanton was in Alpha Dog with Bruce Willis and The Man Who Cried with Johnny Depp.
Oh, wow.
Christopher Fairbank was in The Fifth Element with Bruce Willis and London Fields, Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah.
Randall Reeder was in Sin City with Bruce Willis and 21 Jump Street with Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
John Malkovich was in Bruce Willis, was with Bruce Willis in Red 2, and The Libertine with Johnny. Gary Busey. Yeah, The Libertine.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gary Busey was
what?
With Bruce Willis on the Saturday Night Live 15th anniversary.
Okay, come on. All right. That being said, I want to see that.
Oh, yeah. How about Kevin Dillon was in A Day to Die with Bruce Willis and Platoon with Johnny. Kevin Pollak was in Cop Out with Bruce Willis and Kane's Man with Johnny. Corey Stoll was in Lucky Number 7, Bruce Willis. Lucky Number 11.
11, yeah, with Josh Hartnett.
And Black Mass with Johnny. Jimmy Ortega was in Last Man Standing with Bruce and Rum Diary with Johnny. Bill Murray was in Rock the Casbah with Bruce and Ed Wood with Johnny.
Oh, my God. Oh. Okay, sorry. But, oh, my God.
Sarah Jessica Parker was in Striking Distance with Bruce Willis and Ed Wood.
Oh, my God.
With Johnny.
Oh my God, Striking Distance. Okay, yeah.
Faye Dunaway was in The First Deadly Sin with Bruce and Don Juan DeMarco.
Right. Okay.
Here's one more. Last one. Michael Madsen was in Sin City with Bruce and Donnie Brasco with Johnny. And he now plays perfect. Johnny's character in Grindelwald.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a really huge takeaway. And now he replaces.
Don't ask if you don't want to know, because, you know, I'm always going to have the answers.
Yeah, pretty good.
We got to do another Stump the Host one of these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should, actually. And I need to concentrate on it.
Okay, so next. It looks like we've only got time for maybe one, maybe two more, if they're short.
You know, if we're going to... All right, so if we're going to do two, I've got a list of three. I've got a hero, a villain, and an anti-hero, and I'm going to go ahead and eliminate the villain, which was Steven in Django Unchained. And I'm going to
explain why he was the villain, though. He was a black guy who hated other black guys.
Yeah, well, he... And, you know, we've heard this in social sciences here, particularly in the South. I ended up doing, you know, a minor in sociology. As a survival mechanism, you had some slaves that were very, very good at running households, and they were stewards
and they
or
were
squives.
They were over other slaves.
Yes, and if you did that for like 50, 60, 70 years, and your master treated you fairly decently, you believed the bullshit that you were above the other slaves. And so Sam ended up playing Steven, and he was one of these characters. And normally, of course, historically, you would have been like, well, of course he thought that way, but he was a major, major plot driver in Django Unchained and was irreprehensible when it came to betraying Django.
Betraying his own people for the love of his master.
Absolutely, absolutely. He was almost completely infatuated with his master, played by Leonardo DiCaprio.
Once again.
And I mean, we've all seen the memes. And so, that being said, I'm going to cross that out. And we've done some commentation for it because I really want to talk about these final two, babe. If we've got time for two.
Sure. Let's go for it.
So.
Next time you record, so you can do the timekeeping thing.
Yeah, all right. All right, you bet. So, and you're going to have opinions on these.
Usually do.
These are what I feel are his two defining roles. We've got Mace Windu.
Okay.
And I could see people arguing me on this if it weren't for the fact that that was three films, actually technically four, if you count episode 9, where he actually showed up in the studio and did voiceovers to do Mace Windu's voice and presence.
Right.
And also, guys, God damn it, he was Jules in Pulp Fiction.
Yes!
He's Jules in Pulp Fiction.
Yes! Sorry, I love Jules. I just, you know, good guy, bad guy, I really don't care. At that point, when you're watching Pulp Fiction, when you get so wrapped up in the movie, yeah, the only thing you can think of is, aw, he already left, when it goes to a scene with John Travolta when he's not there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
but yeah.
Right. He's already dead. Right, right.
And I mean, just the difference between the two characters, Travolta and Jackson. Like, when they guy shot him in the head. He shot the dude in the head. So there's blood everywhere. So they're like, okay, go, you know, clean up, wash your hands. So he goes in there and they wash their hands. Well, Sam's character takes a towel and dries them off, hangs the towel back up. Very nice, very neat.
Yep.
And then John Travolta's character, quote, washes his hands and hands Sam the towel. And he's like, this is the shit that's going to bring this motherfucker to a head. He's
yeah,
like, what?
Right.
Did you wash it? You saw me wash them? No, I saw you get them wet. Yeah, but blood, it's hard to get off. Yeah, but when I used a towel, it didn't look like the end of a damn tampon.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it was those little fucking seeds.
It was those little kind of almost nitpicky, if you really look at it, attitudes and ideas that made Jules the fucking icon that he was.
And he is the icon, absolutely. You know, you can't help but know that Travolta and Jackson ended up basically saying, this is how my character would say it.
Right.
You know that's true. I would love to know how much a collaborative where they're like, you know, Samuel, read the script versus versus Samuel just fucking, you know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
Samuel Jackson, just do this. Right. You know, I can't help but think that, you know, that was what was going on in Pulp Fiction, but I would kind of love to know the analytics.
That would be an interesting thing.
On Johnny, you know, certainly there have been directors that have been like,
just keep the camera on him and let it roll.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, Hiddleston and...
Hiddleston's too much of a perfectionist.
Yeah, he may be into scripts, or he would interject in script before they filmed it.
Right. Now, he has done that. But if it's on the script, that's what you're going to see on the screen.
Correct. And you get Sam Jackson, and you're not going to give him a script and be like, exactly what it says on the paper, Sam.
Just do it.
No.
You're going to be like, okay, here's the general idea, and you do with that what you want to.
You know, and whenever I think of Nick Fury, I think of Jules. I really do.
And then the other side of Jules. If Jules had not been a mobster.
And there have been some really cool, interesting fan theories where they, you know, of course it's not canon, but they basically say that, you know, Jules ended up taking Nick Fury as a code name or whatever, and it was before. And
that would be awesome!
But yeah, you know, in a way, and it works.
Oh yeah.
When you think of it that way.
Yes, it does.
And it's really because Jules was such an outstanding character.
Well,
and,
Jules was a good guy at the bottom of it. Whereas, you know, most bad guys pretty much are bad all the way through. Jules really wasn't a bad guy. He was doing what he was told. Yeah. And he enjoyed the power of being a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, and he was deep about it. He acknowledged that he was deep. He quoted Ezekiel, you know.
My favorite, if you don't mind me interrupting once again, I'm so sorry.
Do it.
Mm-hmm. My favorite line is, because, you know, Tarantino's character keeps interrupting him. If you give that motherfucker $1,500, I swear to God, I'll shoot him myself. Shut the fuck up. He says, I'm not giving him this money. I'm buying something for it. And Travolta's character looks at him, and the bad guy's character looks at him, and they're both looking at him like he's lost his mind. And he goes, I'm buying your life. I'm giving you this money so I don't have to shoot your motherfucking ass dead.
Right.
And I mean, my jaw hit the floor and I went, okay, that's so stupid. It's more, wait. Holy shit, that makes sense. Oh my God.
It did make sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Once you stop to think about it, yeah, it did. And I mean, it really blew my mind that it made sense. And I mean, the speech Travolta gives about, you're going to be a bum. You know, you're going to go through my garbage and eat what I throw away. That's a bum.
Yeah, right.
You know, but the thing is, that's not what he was after. That's not what he was doing. That's not what he was going for.
Yeah, no. And, you know, Jules ended up saying, you know, he envisioned himself as David Carradine in Kung Fu traveling. You know,
he's
going to
be one who walks the earth.
Yep. And so, you know, I don't count Jules as a bad guy. I had two heroes, two villains, and one anti-hero. And Jules is kind of the anti-hero. He's kind of like Venom.
I love Venom.
Yeah, and it's like that, you know, or Deadpool.
Yep, more, Deadpool
more
too.
More Venom, you know, but more Venom.
Yeah.
You know, he is killing scumbags.
Yeah, but he's still killing people.
and he does not have a problem. I love that scene where they finally, when he does the Ezekiel.
Oh, yeah, and he analyzes it. He breaks it down. You know, I always thought that I was this.
Vengeance upon thee, and then he and Travolta end up emptying the clip, and you have like a POV of the guy getting shot. Travolta flinches when he's shooting his pistol, and a lot of people.
And Jackson does not blink.
Jackson just stares down like he's looking in a fucking cool glass of water. The only other person that they say in Hollywood that can do that
Carrie Fisher.
Oh, when she did the Blues Brothers.
Yep.
Yeah. She's one, and Mila Jovovich.
Oh yeah.
Whenever she did the Resident Evil stuff, she never flinched. Whenever she fired it off, Samuel Jackson is in that club to where these guys that are supposed to be training them on how to handle firearms. So, like, you know, you have to go through those whole things, but the final is, do they flinch? Is it realistic looking? You know, are they closing their eyes and shooting their pants when they're firing the gun?
Right.
And Sam Jackson is not that guy.
No. Absolutely not.
And can I segue actually into our last?
Absolutely.
And it is Miss Windu.
Told me to start with before the show, I thought it was a little bit of an odd choice, but the more I think about it, the more I think that it's a character that needs to be recognized and assessed.
Yes.
Because
retrospectively, yes.
This was not a huge major character in the grand scheme of things for the Star Wars franchise. You know, but it kind of was.
But it kind of was, exactly. You know, when we first met Mace in that first installment, he was a traditionalist Jedi. And as it went along further, we actually watched Samuel Jackson portray a man that over thousands of years of tradition, he now has to be like, you know what, my leaders may be evil. And, you know, the action scenes and Mace Windu, bad motherfucker on this lightsaber. Yes, true. Yes. But that was a pretty deep character. You know, it wasn't hugely impactful, like you said.
And it wasn't. The thing about it is he stepped away from the Jedi mindset. You are trained to do what you are told.
Yep.
The Jedi and the Stormtroopers are two sides of the same coin. You do what you're told, and you don't question it. Regardless, you may not like it. It doesn't matter what you like. You do what you're told. And he stepped away from that and said, oh, you know, we may be working for the wrong side. This might be a problem. You know, he kept it quiet, but he did not keep it silent.
No, he was stoic through the whole thing, which that is definitely Mace Windu. And, I mean, he just pulled it off.
He did. It was brilliant.
As an aside, a few years later, Spike TV used to do the Video Game Awards.
Right.
And it used to be kind of a big thing, like the MTV Awards. And they did a segment where Samuel Jackson was playing some video game. I think it was a Call of Duty game versus Donald Faison, who was the best friend of the main character in Scrubs. You remember Scrubs?
Oh, yeah.
The comedy.
Oh, yes, loved it.
You remember his bald best friend?
Yes.
He had the Dominican, you know, girlfriend that was a nurse.
Yeah.
He was playing against him, and they were actually playing this video game, and they were trash-talking each other. And Faison says, you're going to go down just like Mace Windu did, like a bitch.
Oh!
made Samuel Jackson stop the game. Oh! And he just dropped the controller, and he lost it. He lost the match because of that setup. Thought it was great.
Oh, and, damn, I'm going to have to pull that up on YouTube.
And when you look at, you know, Sam Jackson in interviews and you talk about these roles, a lot of MCU guys are very casual anyway. All of them, hats off to them for just being themselves. Samuel Jackson always was himself in these interviews.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know. He's, if you don't mind my submitting this.
Of course.
I really think that Sam projects more of his actual real personality than Johnny or Tom. And it, I think it might have to do with his age and his already impressive resume.
Okay.
But he also, you know,
he's very selective about the roles he picks. He does 3 to 4 movies a year. He is asked to do
three or four
movies a year, but he is asked to do 15 or 16
a year.
He is very selective about the characters that he decides to play. Do you know why he was offered the role as Mace Windu? Did your research circle you around that one?
So they approached him because he was really popular, from what I understand. And he said, the only way I will do this is if you put BMF on my lightsaber.
Nope. That's part of it. The BMF is part of it. And it's got to be purple.
And it's got to be purple. Okay, so what's the other?
But no, he was doing an interview for one of his other characters. And they said, okay, who is someone that you would love to work with that you have not worked with yet? And he said, George Lucas.
Oh.
So when he said that, they said, oh, you know, we have an idea. And proceeded to rewrite the Mace Windu character specifically for Sam. And they had both sides of the character in case Sam turned them down. They could revert back to the original, you know, kind of weakling pussy kind of Windu that was basically no more than a background player. Or if he said yes, they would go with this more dynamic, more forceful, more out there, more in the forefront Mace Windu.
Right.
So yeah, that's essentially where and why Mace Windu became who and what he is.
Well, you know, and also, if you don't mind my throwing this out there, and a whole lot of people don't disagree with me, but the first three episodes, you know, episode 1, 2, and 3, were not good.
No, they weren't.
That being said, some of the bright spots, actually probably the only bright spot, was Samuel Jackson and Mace Windu.
I'm sorry. Okay.
What you got?
Darth Maul in the first one.
Okay, yes, Darth Maul, but they killed him in the first movie, and he was underutilized.
And he was beautiful. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, I watched it for the good-looking characters, like what's his name, and the other what's his name.
there were some good-looking people in that. Actually, you know what? Yeah, Darth Maul actually dying.
Darth Maul was sexy as hell.
And he's my second favorite Star Wars villain, and then just all of a sudden, kind of killing him off was kind of Tarantino.
That kind of killed him off too quick, though.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people, including myself, are like, they killed him off too quick.
Yeah.
But in a way, we're fucking around with lightsabers here.
Well, yeah.
I appreciate that they did the Tarantino thing to where they're like, you know what? Yep, he's dead. He's dead. They fucked with lightsabers.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen him do all three. I don't know.
I'm not going there.
Darth Maul is actually kind of sexy.
Well, see, I would have loved to have seen Darth Maul step into the spot of Darth Vader in the episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, we could have started like that.
To where he was the ultimate villain, as far as you know.
Right.
You know, for the at least the first two. And then the third one is when everything expounds, you kill him, and then you have to go after the real bad guy. You know, that would have been great. But it's patterned, and that's one thing that Lucas does not do, is patterned.
That's true. Yes, quite true.
However...
So do you... Oh.
Go ahead.
So, do you have a favorite Sam Jackson role?
Actually, yeah, it's kind of a toss-up between two.
Okay.
And you. I would be willing to bet you might be able to name one, but you won't be able to name both.
Well, certainly, I would. Well, okay, maybe not certainly, but Nick Fury.
Nope. Not even one.
Lazarus in Black Snake Moon.
No. A combination of the man in Deep Blue Sea.
Sure.
And the scientist in Jurassic Park. Because both of them are extremely underrated.
Scientists.
Yeah, just, I swear to God, my daughter has a sixth sense. She knows when we're recording. She'll just have to wait.
Well, we're close.
Oh, we're getting there. But yeah, those two, a combination of those two. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Jules. Jules in Pulp Fiction. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And trying to ask me to name a favorite Samuel L. Jackson character is like asking me to name a favorite Tarantino character.
Okay, yeah, right.
Because gotcha. Quentin Tarantino plays some really fucked up parts, but every single one of his parts I absolutely adore.
Great so. With characters.
Oh, yeah. And he can play those weird off-the-wall characters that most people can't get away with playing.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah,
so,
that's still Dawn. For
oh, no kidding, right? I mean, I'm sorry.
Pussy.
Yeah, why is that the line I was thinking about? I was thinking the exact same thing. You know, when he turns around and looks at her and goes, you know, I could do that for you, you know, if you wanted me to. It's absolutely no problem. She's going...
Yeah, sure.
You know, she's just like, okay, whatever. But yeah. Tarantino in Dust Till Dawn is amazing. And Clooney in Dust Till Dawn. Oh, that's another one we ought to do if we can find a link to it.
Yeah.
George Clooney?
Clooney's tattoo in Dust Till Dawn.
Oof. Too bad it's fake.
Yeah, and it is fake, but everybody kind of was like, that's probably the best tattoo in all of cinematic history.
Oh, no, it's just the best tattoo because it's on the body that's the best body you've ever seen.
It was a fake tattoo.
Oh, it's beautiful, though. But, yeah, speaking of tattoos, one of my favorites, and I can't even remember the name of the movie, where it's Morgan Freeman... A couple other really of the older actors. Morgan Freeman is in line at the bank, and the guy comes in and robs the bank. Well, he goes into his wallet and pulls out what little bit of cash he has, and the robber hands it back to him and says, "It is our job to take care of the generation that came before us." And he gives him back his money and he leaves. Well, the robber has this tattoo coming out from underneath his t-shirt and up his neck. So, the cops are trying to identify this robber. And, of course, they have the brilliant idea, use the tattoo. Yeah, so, they're scrolling through.
Does, by the way, good move.
At the same time, the Morgan Freeman's character is going, you know, I ought to rob a bank. So he goes to a ne'er-do-well nephew and says, I need you to hook me up with somebody who can teach me how to rob a bank. And he goes, okay, wait a minute, I might know somebody. And he sends this guy to him, and after, you know, about 3/4 of the way through the film, The guy looks at him and says, "It is our job to take care of those who came before us." And Morgan Freeman's character goes, because he has no tattoo. It's a fake tattoo he wears into the bank. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Sorry, the talk of tattoos made me think about that. Sorry.
No. I'm trying to remember
the movie, because I cannot call it for nothing on this earth.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, it's like three or four old guys go in and actually they come up with a plan and they end up robbing a bank and getting away with it.
Well, also, I'm trying to think of what it was that you said that described your sister like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, God.
Gregarious or something like that.
No, I'm not going to be able to remember it.
What you did it again is what I was going to bring up, because I cannot believe you fucking said ne'er-do-well.
Yeah, people think I use that kind of language to intimidate. No, I just use that kind of language.
There's like 15% of your spirit that siphons something out of Ireland directly at any given time. Hey, never do well.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one.
You're truly the Black Irish.
And half my soul still wants to go back. I've never been there, but I want to go back. Oh, yeah, absolutely incorrigible. So don't encourage me.
Yeah, you're incorrigible.
You wouldn't have me any other way.
Sure.
All right, guys, we are at 1 hour and 6 minutes. So we got to go. Contact information. Go ahead with yours while I look ours up.
Well, you know, I'm going to give my information because I'd really love some input on what do you guys think.
Right. So tell us how Carrie did tonight.
How I did as a host. And yeah. I apologize early if it's bad. That being said, does anybody agree with me that Nick Fury is actually Samuel Jackson's greatest character? He actually dwarfs Jules.
All right, it's been put out there.
It has been put out there, and you know what? And of course, we're going to actually discuss. There's not going to be any sort of, you know, fanboy think. But if you want to talk about this, you can reach me directly through Hotmail. Send me an email. Mako3303, no spaces.
That's M-A-K-O?
M-A-K-O, like M-A-K-O. The shark. M-A-K-O3303 at hotmail.com. And you can also find me very reliably on PlayStation Network. I'm Traveler2300, no spaces. Two L's when you spell out Traveler. And
yeah, that's how I get in touch with him when he won't answer his phone.
Yeah, you get to, especially in the afternoons and Central Time Zone.
Yeah, there you go.
You'll find me on PlayStation Network.
So, guys, if you want to go directly to our main hub, we've got the blog. We are at depthedshiddlestoners.com. No spaces, no caps. Or you can go to barryreese.net, click on the link. You can also email us, depthedsandhiddlestoners@yahoo.com. Or we have a dedicated phone line. That number is 949-379-5476. Give us a call. Let us know when is a good time to call you back. Let us know who you want to talk to. We'll make sure that happens. Anything else?
Nope. Thank you. Actually, great episode. And thank you for letting me host.
Oh, no, I want you to do it again. That way I don't have to deal with it. So what are we doing next week?
What? You know what? You know what? Next week we will be choosing from...
Okay, we got nothing.
From the Tim Burton universe.
All right.
We're going to go Johnny. Not played by Johnny. Top heroes, villains, and anti-heroes. Not played by Johnny.
So this is homework, right? We got to figure this out, and then we'll get together and discuss it next week.
No, well, like supporting characters. You know, gotcha. When we talk about the Avengers and that sort of thing, you know, Nick Fury, he was a supporting character, that sort of thing. People that are supporting characters.
Like I said, we're gonna figure it out this week, yes. And then when we get together, we're gonna discuss it.
Sure.
Sounds good to me. All right, guys, We gotta go. Love ya.
Peace and love.
Love and peace, baby. Later.
Later.